It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Well, there's a hint of fall in the air, and you might have noticed it. Remember, when you go out on the golf course this time of the year, make sure you pay particular attention to the signs that are around the golf course to help your superintendent and yourself care for the course. Superintendents have a tough job to do, especially this time of the year as we get into the winter months. Try to make it a little bit easier on them by adhering to those signs that they put out, whether it be 90 degrees, stay on the cart path with the carts, and always remember, as I say at the end of every episode, to find your ball mark and fix it when on the greens. In this episode of From the Short Grass, I want to introduce you to Roger Steele. I met Roger down at the Jackson T. Stevens Cup at Trinity Forest Golf Club in Dallas, Texas. Roger grew up on the west side of Chicago. He wasn't interested in the game of golf. But instead of worrying about golf, he was trying to emulate the great Michael Jordan, who led his hometown Bulls to 6 NBA championships between 1991 and 1998. Roger Steele Sr. had other plans for his son. He wanted him to play the game of golf, and he introduced him to it at a very young age. In fact, at the age of 5, Roger Steele was in front of then U.S. amateur champion Tiger Woods on a range on the south side of Chicago. I'm going to let Roger pick up the story when we come back from this break, but I need to tell you about our friends at Blackman Auctions. Since 1938, Blackman Auctions has been in the auction business. They are the premier auction business in Central Arkansas. Find them on the web, blackmanauctions.com. If you're interested in going to an auction, you can find their upcoming auctions right there on their website. We're back after the break with Roger Steele.
With all the decisions you need to make about what to do in El Dorado, finding a place to stay is an easy one. The Haywood is uniquely positioned to make your stay one to treasure. Located in the historic Union Square District of El Dorado, the Haywood offers luxurious accommodations that feature contemporary, colorful rooms with high-quality bedding, comfortable baths with walk-in showers, and a spacious workspace with stylish plantation shutters that are unique additions to the stunning decor in a non-smoking environment. Make the Haywood your home away from home the next time you visit El Dorado.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am Trey Schaap. What does Roger Steele have in common with Stephen Curry? Well, they both love the game of golf, but Stephen Curry was Roger Steele's first ever guest on Range Talk. Roger Steele has taken his love of the game of golf to a platform that is trying to bring more into the game of golf. His range sessions with John Rahm, Larry Fitzgerald, Annika Sorenstam, and, of course, yes, Steph Curry, has the golf world talking about him. And a couple of weeks ago at the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, I had the opportunity to sit down with Roger Steele and get his thoughts on several different things. He doesn't hold back, and I believe you're really going to be impressed with Roger after this interview. On the tee, Roger Steele.
Roger, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. Growing up in Chicago, I wouldn't think, especially the part of Chicago you grew up from, that you would be a golfer. When did you first pick up a golf club?
So, actually, my father is a retired Chicago police officer. So, around the time he was having me, I guess he was in his 30s, he had been introduced to golf by his lieutenants. And he had found that it was a way for him to, you know, rub elbows with some of the leadership at the police department, captains and lieutenants. And so he had gotten into it pretty heavily. And then he found a local muni course, you know, around the neighborhood that we grew up in. Small 9-hole course, only about 2 trees on it. You know what I mean?
Wow,
I mean, but you could just go out there and wail on the ball. But that was, you know, that became his home course. Those became his core friends. And so really when I was born, you know, and I'm my only child, I was really born into a golf situation. You know, it was how my dad was spending a lot of his recreational time. And being an only child and living in, you know, a not so safe neighborhood, my dad wouldn't let me spend time unsupervised around the neighborhood. So if I wasn't doing something structured athletically, I was at a golf course with him and his 40-year-old friends just fetching beers or, like, you know, just doing anything that anybody told me to do. I wouldn't say that my introduction to the game was one of passion, but it was a foundational part of how I understood, you know, what it was to be a man, because all of these people, you know, they kind of became my inherited godfathers and uncles, all of his golf friends. And just having that early introduction to the etiquette of the game and, you know, just different things like that. Even if I had never touched the club again or, you know, played golf, golf would be a large part of how I processed the world and how I dealt with people. And so I was fortunate in that respect. But one of my earliest golf memories was actually Tiger Woods when he was 17 years old. Earl, his father, was bringing him around the country and bringing him to inner city municipal golf courses and trying to raise money for Tiger. You know, he was was going on his little USM winning spree. And so they brought him to the south side of Chicago. I'm from the west side, but, you know, my dad took us over to the south side because he was doing a kids clinic, right? And so I just remember being asleep in the front row of this clinic with 17-year-old Tiger Woods. I just remember not being awake, and I remember being shaken viciously by my father some way to wake up because Tiger was calling kids up to hit golf shots. And so Tiger was like, all right, come on, I'll hit a golf shot. And, you know, a couple kids went before me, and I don't know what happened, but I must have piped this drive. And then me and Tiger ended up in the newspaper the next day, and it was like,
how about that?
Tiger Woods, 17, working on Fame Game or something. So one of my earliest golf memories is hitting a golf ball in front of Tiger Woods. And it was all downhill from there.
No, come on now. I guess the next question is, were you nervous? I mean, did you understand the significance of hitting a golf ball in front of Tiger then?
You wish that you could live your entire life just being that unaware of what's going on.
Yeah.
You don't know who Tiger Woods is. He's 17 and good at golf. Like, what does that matter? He's not rich. He wasn't famous yet, you know, so I just think that it was just, you know, and it's kind of like something that served me going forward. I reflect back on it and I try to be super introspective about that moment. But it's like, if you just get out of your own way and just ignore, you know, however magnanimous a situation is, you're usually able to perform pretty well. I think that it's just circumstance that makes people be a little bit different or change. But no, it was, you know, I don't recall having any nerves. I remember it being something super effortless. And I guess the newspapers thought that it was pretty cool too. So, no, that, but, you know, I think that those early memories of, you know, obviously Tiger and, you know, how my dad was loved the game so much and obviously him being my hero, it did foster a deep connection to the game. No matter how I chose to dive deeper into the sport, I would have always been connected to golf through those experiences.
And here you are trying to grow the game of golf by bringing the inner city youngsters to it.
Yeah.
How important is that for you?
As I reflect now, you know, I'm 35, and so I guess I played golf through high school, wasn't very good, and I was really just doing it because my
father. Not what I hear. I heard you were really good.
Nah. You see, we at the Stevens Cup now. This
right?
is,
this those is, are the really good ones.
Man, I was not. Those kids would have literally kicked me off the golf course if I was playing with them back in my day. But you know, I was really anxious to get away from the game just because I felt like my dad had forced it on me for so long. So I went to college. I quit for about 6 or 7 years, and then when I finally picked it up as an adult, golf became everything that I cared about because I was able to form my own relationship with it. I started to really understand the nuances of the game and how it, you know, it helped you become a better person. It helped you connect with people. It helped you understand things about yourself, become more patient, you know, understand what hard work and results, like what the correlation between those things are. And so I really formed a deep personal relationship with the game. And because of that relationship, the people that I've met through golf have taken me all over the world. I mean, you know, I flew on my first private jet because of golf. Like, I went skiing for the first time because of golf. I, you know, been to play all of these crazy country clubs and going to all these crazy destinations because of, you know, all because of golf. And so I'm just like, man, the only difference between me and every kid that grew up in my neighborhood is that I played this game. That's the only thing that separates us. And now, you know, as an adult, I look at the disparity in some of, you know, what my life is. And not to, you know, I don't know how happy some of the people are from my neighborhood, but I look at where their life is versus where mine is. And I would say a lot of people would pick mine 10 out of 10 times, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the only difference was golf. And so I'm like, man, this game is like a cheat code to life, right? You know, if anybody in my network asked me, like, hey, man, I'm looking for a lawyer. Hey, I'm looking for a doctor. Hey, I'm looking for a plumber, architect, or whatever the case. I can just look at people I play golf with, and I have, like, instant referrals, you know, like a real deep connections, you know, friendships that I can facilitate off of the people that I've met through the game of golf. And I look at a lot of kids and the things that they're missing and the opportunities for upward mobility. Those are the elements that are missing. You know, they don't have the relationships. They don't have the connectivity. They just don't have anything that pulls them into all of these different spaces organically. And so I'm not really trying to force golf on kids. I'm not trying to say, you know, quit basketball, quit football, whatever. You know, do anything that you want to do, but just add golf to your toolbox and watch how your life improves. Like, I say this over and over, but, like, any life plus golf is a better life, you know, and that's really the only thing that I'm trying to get across. So if a kid ever looked at golf and said, oh, this isn't a game for me, I'm like, look, here's 7,000 ways why it is a game for you.
Right.
You should try it. And I'm not telling you to be a professional. I'm not saying you got to play in college or play in the Stevens Cup or anything like that. But just give this game a try. Give it an honest effort and see the reverberations in other areas of your life.
Did you play other sports growing up?
I grew up in Chicago during the Jordan era. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so look, everybody
thought the Bulls.
Everybody thought there was going to be some rendition of an NBA player.
You did too, didn't you?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. You know what I mean? Then, you know, I got mad when I realized I was probably done growing in high school and looking at my parents like, why y'all give me these weak jeans, man? I'm like, Mama, you couldn't date nobody else?
5'11"?
Yeah, like 6 feet.
Okay, 6 feet.
Probably 6 feet, so – it's just like, man, you know, we don't got the good stuff to take us to the next level.
So golf it was.
So golf, yeah, and it wasn't even that. You know, I was a pretty, you know, smart kid. So I went to University of Illinois for civil engineering. So that's what I majored in. And,
yeah.
You know, I was good at math and science. And so, you know, that's a career path that I picked, not really having a passion for it. But, you know, you think about being a first-generation college student, You really are trying to get your family on base. You know, that's like your mm-hmm. orientation. Like, my dad did a good job. You know, both my parents, they worked jobs for, you know, 30-plus years. They retired. And, you know, it was like my responsibility, like, let's keep this family going in the right direction. My dad saved a little bit of money. I make some more money over a long and, you know, hopefully successful career. I save more money, give my kids a better chance. And so it was like I was just kind of trying to follow that model, you know, like just be as successful or like be as, you know, just following your father's footsteps mm-hmm. more or less. And I think that, like, falling in love with this game, it just opened my mind. Like, when I fell in love with golf as an adult, this was the first time that I ever really loved anything. I hadn't experienced a passion for anything in life until I found golf as an adult.
What do you think that is? That just something inside you clicks and you're like, this is what I really want to do?
Yeah.
Do you remember when that moment was?
Yeah, I remember going to a driving range for the first time because my job at the time, I had just gotten off probation not too long ago, and they had a company-wide email that they were giving days off if we played in client outings. And I'm like, hell
not
yeah.
Not bad probation we're talking about.
This was
probation.
It's like this
your
like
probationary
the
6 months,
period. Yeah, where they could fire you without reason. You know what I mean? You know, the only time I've ever really showed up to anything on time.
Right.
But so they told us we could get, you know, paid days off if we played in this client golf outing, who in the office played golf, you know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'll do anything to get away from this desk.
Paid days off? Yeah, sign me up.
So I remember dusting my clubs off, hitting a few solid golf shots at a driving range, and then I kind of got into this habit of going to the driving range trying to get everything, you know, back going. And then I remember just meeting all of these interesting people, right? Like people that I would normally never talk to, you know, as a child or as a college student, like people that weren't my age, you know, weren't in, you know, my same socioeconomic situation. Like it was just, I was just interacting with all these different types of people because we love this game. And I'm like, that's really cool. And then I play in this outing and all of my project managers, everybody that would kind of just walk past my desk and be like, whatever. They found out that I could play golf and it was like night and day. It was like, Roger, what do you, they coming there leaning on my desk. Roger, what are your plans this weekend? You playing anywhere? You want to come out here and play? And I was just like, man, this is so crazy. You know, I had developed my own love for it, but also seeing how I was received as Roger the golfer versus just Roger the whatever, you know, I had a much deeper appreciation. Not to say that my love for the game was transactional, but I truly appreciated how the game was not only opening up my eyes for who I could be, but also opening other people up to who I was. And I had never experienced anything like that. And I worked as an engineer for 5 years, and I think that every day that it was above, you know, 50 degrees outside, I was doing something golf related when I got off of work. Whether I was going to a driving range, you know, I started taking lessons. I started, you know, playing in amateur events. I tried long drive. I tried anything that was golf.
I love that.
I did and everything that there was to do golf for a very long time.
And now your passion is trying to grow the game. And when you see what is happening around the world, and specifically let's talk the United States and Chicago,
mm-hmm.
for example, the murder rates there. If you could touch 1, 2, 3 people that could get the same passion that you have by introducing them to this game, and then if they could touch 3 or 4 more, do you just sit back sometimes, Roger, and think about how much this could expand?
Yeah. Like, I think a lot about that, about the things that are going on in the city, the things that are going on in this country. As far as the lack of opportunity, right? There's information available to everybody, right? Like the information to do better is there, but there aren't clear pathways to get it and apply it in ways that, you know, help people live better lives. Like when I think about the things that are going on in Chicago, it's just the optics is that there's not enough opportunity. People are not aware of the pathways to living whatever quality of life it is that they want to live. They aren't aware of the pathways to get there. And so they choose cheap and easy things to try to obtain that. You know, they choose crime, they choose fraud, you know, they choose violence because the only thing that they're really after is a better quality of life. And when they can exchange dollars, they exchange power. And in exchanging power, they exchange violence. And they exchange, you know, drugs and things of that nature. And I do believe that if more people could spend more time inside of this environment and meet the types of people that have found success in all of these super unique ways, I mean, it would really open their mind up to what they could become, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, I listen to as much rap music as the next person. They glorify this lifestyle, but nobody really enjoys that, you know. I got family members that live that way. They don't like, you know, losing sleep at night or looking over their shoulder everywhere they go or looking at everybody trying to see if somebody's watching them or anything. Like, nobody really enjoys that. And I do believe that if they were shown better ways, that people would make better choices, because everybody, I believe everybody is making the best choice that they feel is available and obtainable for them and attainable. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So everybody's doing their best. If we presented people with better options, they would make better choices. And I think that golf could be a tremendous conduit as far as how people understood the choices that were truly available to them.
When did you decide to take this big time and quit doing the civil engineering, focusing on golf, but also focusing on the social media and being a media influencer?
Yeah, it happened kind of organically, if I'm being honest. Like, I quit civil engineering without much of a plan. Like, I had saved up some money. I was spending time around a lot of successful entrepreneurs, and I was like, oh, yeah, I want to be an entrepreneur. You know what I mean? And so I lost a lot of money really fast.
Yeah.
My dad was not very happy about a lot of my life choices, probably, and this happened in probably about 2016. But I knew that, like, there was a home for me in golf, and I was just going to do whatever I could to figure it out. And so I started, you know, doing a lot of creative content work for other brands. I wasn't good at executing on business plans, but I was good at storytelling. And a lot of the people that I would sit down with, which, I mean, golf was giving me opportunities to sit down with C-level executives and pitch them terrible ideas. Like, that's the power of the game. Like, I'm taking Monday morning meetings, primetime meetings, with people that had a lot of money and giving them terrible ideas. But you know, at the end of a lot of those meetings, they were like, hey, like, I don't really think that works, or that you can pull this all together, these things that you said, but you do tell a really good story, and I think that there's room for you on the marketing side. And so I just started to work as a storyteller in a golf capacity. And so, you know, I had like a small business. We were, you know, I had about maybe 5 or 6 clients that I was working with on a monthly basis. And then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lost everything, like, you know, in one fell swoop, over a 2-week span, everybody called me and said, Raj, we can't do anything. We got to freeze everything. We got to stop this. Because what I realized is a lot of people weren't working with me because they needed me. They were working with me because they liked me, you know. And so when that happened, you know, I sat and I thought a lot about, like, who I wanted to be. For a long time, my golf experience was kind of, how do I fit in? How do I get my little piece of something? You know, how do I posture myself to seem worthy of XYZ opportunity? But I wasn't living authentically during that time. I was really just trying to posture myself to, like, get something. But then when COVID happened, and then you have to sit with the fact that, hey, I have no money coming in, and, you know, like, nobody's really calling to check on you that much. You know what I mean?
Right.
You are really by yourself. I had to ask myself, like, who did I want to be? And, like, all I wanted to do was, you know, play golf and speak my mind. I'm a very, like, outspoken person. And I had quieted a lot of those things to try to exist within the confines of golf, you know? And so I started to just talk about things that I cared about people I cared about events I cared about stories I cared about. And it was really just that organic, like, hey, I don't really have a platform. I don't know who watching, but these are the things that I care about. And these are the things that I have to say. And I did that, man. And it was just, the response was crazy. You know, brands came, you know, celebrities started hitting me up like, man, it was cool what you said about that. You know, oh, man, it was a cool story about the Advocates Tour. Oh, man, that's a cool story about your dad's junior golf camp. Oh, man, that was cool, this. And it was just this really, it kind of seemed like a very visceral response to all it. Like, man, this was just my normal life.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that I was just spending time doing for free. And then, it, like, people started to pay me to go to things, you know. And it still, to this day, it all kind of feels surreal. But I'm not telling people that they need to buy anything. I'm not telling people that they need to support anything. It's really just, these are the things I find interesting, and these are the brands that do things that I find interesting. And it really is nothing beyond that.
Best guest you've had, or best on the range,
yeah,
segment that you put together, who, yeah, would that be?
Oh, that's tough. I've had, like, when we did our first season of that, I had so many good friends that were so willing. One of my favorite couple people that I've met through this is Larry Fitzgerald.
Okay.
I spend a lot of time with him. He's become like a big brother to me. through this, all through this, somebody you watched on TV turning into one of your close friends. That's surreal. And another guy by the name of Kelly James, he's an entertainer, songwriter on the PGA Tour Golf. So got probably one of the most connected people that I know in the golf world. And you know, on that Range Talk episode, we got to actually rap together. That was my other past life. You know, in Chicago, you were either gonna be a basketball player, you're gonna be a rapper. So Kelly keep my rap dreams alive.
There you go.
Yeah, but those who are really cool, and then we had Steph Curry on there to kick it off, and that's like unprecedented level of access.
Yeah, that's big.
And to meet him and to have him speak to me as if I was a peer, because he spoke to me like a golfer and not like a basketball player. I thought that was like one of the more monumental moments of all of this. That's made it feel like I felt very validated in that moment. Like, man, you're sitting in front of a real life, like real time legend talking about golf and his plans for the game and all of this other stuff, and talking to him like a friend.
That's awesome.
Afterwards, he's like, oh man, take my number down. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, what? Yeah. What?
That's awesome.
So I think those are some of the craziest moments. And those are all non-golfers.
Yeah.
Non-golfers.
Yeah. Favorite golf course you've ever played?
Cypress.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got to play. I mean, we're at the magnificent Trinity Forest right now. So, I mean, it's crowded at the top. But Cypress, it swept me off my feet, man. You get to that, you know, those last few holes, 15, 16, 17, and it's like, whoa. The fact that Alistair had the courage to build golf real estate on that land,
yeah,
that, you know, that long ago is just, it's crazy. I would have been terrified. Like, as a contractor, like, trying to put that actual course together would have been insane.
That's awesome. Last question. Fantasy foursome, you and three others, living or deceased, that you would like to play a round of golf with.
Gotta bring my dad.
Oh yeah.
But as a forever thank you for introducing me to the game. You gotta bring Tiger in his prime too. Actually, not Tiger in his prime. Tiger when he was like on his way up, like 97 Tiger.
17 when he was instructing
that
you.
That would have been crazy. Yes, man. Like like 96 Tiger or something like
okay.
that. Early pro Tiger.
So he would have been about 20 then.
Yeah, some early pro Tiger.
Yeah,
and probably Jordan at the peak of his career, when he was playing his best basketball and deeply in love with golf. Because one of the things that I wish was different was that Jordan was more vocal about his love for the game while he was playing. Like, that would have changed everything about
it. Because when Tiger came along, it was cool to play golf then.
But Jordan had already been doing it.
I know.
He had already been
doing it. If he would have said, hey, this is cool.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it would have made Tiger's career that much more magnanimous to have that basketball and like a big cultural sign off like that, and then have Tiger come right behind that. Oh, my God. But those four, that'd be a crazy foursome right there.
Roger, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah. Man, this was really fun. Really fun.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Stayridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
That's all the time we have for this edition of From the Shortgrass. Don't forget, when you need an overnight place to stay, go to bphotels.com. Find one of their properties that they manage and book. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group. Matthew Allen, Blair Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties. My thanks to Roger Steele for taking time out of his busy day to sit down and chat with me. Find him on Instagram and Twitter and follow him. You will be impressed. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.